We present Frank Partington in Man with a Background of Flame, adapted for radio by J. McClellan Ross from the novel by Richard Johns.
Jim Flaherty jumped off the roof, I decided to write this story. Of course, I don't know how it's going to end, but there's no difficulty about beginning with Lisa. Lisa, you see, had just turned me down.
Thank you, Richard. I enjoyed the show very much. Especially the clown, who made me think of you.
Can you imagine us getting rid of our inhibitions like he did, chewing up that matchbox and so on?
I can imagine nothing more inhibiting.
Oh, what shall we do now?
Well, personally, I intend to go straight home.
Can I come too?
You know why you can't.
As you're already separated from your husband, I don't see any good reason why not. But if we must make it a family matter, you shall get divorced, and I'll marry you as soon as the decree's through.
I don't know you well enough.
What do you want to know me for? Love is impersonal, Lisa. It transcends.
Oh, don't be absurd, Richard. Please, don't be absurd.
At this time, I was deciding to have a nervous breakdown. It was not a serious breakdown. Psychoanalysis had just come back into fashion, and I thought I'd have a go with a psychoanalyst my friend Freddie Van Berg recommended.
Have 3 sessions a fortnight. I'd try to drag it out for 6 months if I were you. Otherwise, you won't get your fun.
But it turned out there was no fun to be had with Mr. French.
Now, why did you come to me, Mr. Johns?
I was recommended.
Yes, but I mean, why do you want to be analyzed?
Well, it's very hard to bring out. But I've been turned down by a woman. And this puts me out of my stride.
In what way? What sort of effect did it have?
A diminution of personality is the best way I can put it.
But you got what you wanted. You felt safe.
What do you mean, safe?
Sit down, Mr. Johns. Why were you afraid of this woman?
Because I'm afraid of uncontrolled feeling. I was trained as an engineer, and I like controlled factors.
You haven't been following your profession lately?
The war gave me a get-out. I was in the Navy.
How old are you?
29.
An engineer who isn't engineering.
I'm writing about it. I run a technical magazine about tractors. Or rather, I did.
Good.
If my job folded today, our department was scrapped.
And when you fall in love, you get worried.
Well, I seem to have done this time.
Tell me, are you coming to me as a sort of hobby?
I don't know what you mean.
In any case, I'm very much afraid I shouldn't be able to help you, Mr. Johns. There will be no fee.
But why have you changed your mind? We hadn't started. Look, Mr. French, can I tell you a symptom? It's a mental one, but I feel there's no possibility of action. There's nothing I can do. I can move about, I can eat, drink, and sleep, but no action, nothing.
That's something we've all got to resolve for ourselves, Mr. John.
After that interview, I knew what a tennis ball feels like when bounced against the wall. It was Freddie Van Berg who sent me to Mr. French, and when I got home, there was a message to meet Freddie at the Patisserie Pompeii next morning.
I understand. Being sacked is like being bitched by a woman. Nobody likes it. Now give me another croissant, Rich.
Crescent rolls, they call them here.
Do you know anything about diamonds?
No, I've always been told they're a bit ostentatious.
Diamonds are extraordinary stones. When well set, they're so alive. You know, diamonds can be made very cheap.
Synthetic?
No, real ones. I mean, they can be obtained very cheap. But you've heard the story of the Vaal River.
Freddie Van B., when I finish my coffee and croissant...
Crescent roll, you
mean? I'm going back to the department to correct the last proofs of the last issue of the Tractor Times. I just say that, Freddie, to remind you, I don't operate in diamonds. I'm not interested in diamonds. I don't want any diamonds.
You have not heard the story of the Vaal River?
No, thank you very much.
Nor of Lichtenberg?
Nope.
The diamond rush in 28?
That has been straight.
They found the diamonds in the pebbles on the beach. There is what they call diamond-bearing alluvial gravel. This pocket I was telling you about is at Lichtenberg. Another load is near the confluence of the Vaal and the Orange Rivers. Some geologists say they come from a wonderful diamond-bearing reef we haven't found yet. Anyway, they had to stop people washing for diamonds, or they'd have flooded the world and made them cheap. There was a law passed making diamond washing practically illegal in these places. And the claims were taken over by the big combines.
All right. Put up your proposition and I'll knock it down, Betty.
Would you like to join me? I want to pick up some diamonds from the beach. You wouldn't have to go to Africa in person any more than I would.
Freddie, your story's far too cock and bull.
You can confirm it in any reference book. Richard, tell me, would you like a job in Fleet Street?
Now you're talking.
But that's what I've been talking about all the time. A man I know from Joburg. Now listen, Richard.
All right, Freddie, you have the floor.
A man I know called Herzog, a South African, wants to set up a London office and put a man in charge.
What for?
For an American and European news digest.
But
that window there looks down on Marble Arch. Now, once Tommy Blair, this prospector, was in a taxi cab. A six-wheel lorry came round Edgware Road. It got Tommy Blair's taxi up on the pavement and into Hyde Park railings. One of the railings went through Tommy Blair's chest. It was bad luck. A nasty accident. That window probably looks down on it.
Freddie, this hurts.
Tommy Blair found the diamond-bearing soil in Alexander Bay. He came here to raise capital. And after he was dead, a couple of other geologists picked up £150,000 worth of diamonds in 6 weeks.
Are we talking about geology or this chap Herzog with a job to offer?
Both. They interlock. Tommy Blair had a nephew. He lives here now.
Your Mr. Blair is probably as real as your Mr. Herzog.
Oh, all right, Rich. There's no reason why you shouldn't meet Herzog now.
We found in a self-service cafe a man called Herzog in a camel hair coat. About 6 months after being appointed African News Digest London man, I walked across Fleet Street to the American offices. Herzog had acquired the right for us to copy their cables. It was 3 a.m. Even the snooker players at the press club had gone home at this time. But Dirk Rockingham in the American office was still at work.
That non-stop jet plane, John. It's over Karachi now. I suppose your boys will be interested.
For obvious reasons. Yes, I'll have to send that.
You can file your message from here. What's your deadline? I thought you'd have packed up a couple of hours ago.
Jet past Karachi 251. Yes, that's all I need to send, isn't it? They're a bit vague about deadlines.
I like the picture I get of your outfit. All the same, you're doing well, by all accounts. Great character, that chap, Herzog.
He has a pipe dream of becoming the African Northcliffe. Now he's sold out to some big interests. A combine holding diamond mines, cinemas, goodness knows what. They've even got a small private bank in the city.
But not Nevin Hall's outfit.
Nevin Hall is the chairman. His office is at the theatrical agency in Leicester Square, but we've had no occasion to meet so far.
Herzog's out of it, then.
No, he remains editor-in-chief in Africa. I run the London end. I'm my own boss. I make my own assignments.
Then how would you like to assign yourself to a murder?
A murder?
Do you remember the Soho killing? The Nigerian jazz drummer who strangled the prostitute with a stocking?
Well, George Romana. Yes, I used to know him slightly in the drinking clubs off Tottenham Court Road. Surely he's condemned and ready for hanging, isn't he, poor devil?
Somebody's petitioning for reprieve. You know, John, there's a story for you there.
For South Africa, a story about a Negro sex killer.
Yeah, that's the story. There's new evidence, too, from a loony bin Croydon way. I'll show you the paragraph. You see, he's been in this bin already. Makes a difference. It's a humdinger of a story with a Negro and a prostitute, if anybody knew how.
Not for South Africa. All the same, you've given me an idea. As I say, I've met this George Umana. If I were to make an appointment with the medical superintendent of the loony bin, it gives the address here.
Up to you, John.
It'll probably get me shot at dawn. Remember, I want to be buried in an old-fashioned grave. I could just ask a few questions now, Doctor. For instance, what exactly have you said to the Home Office about George Umana?
As the medical superintendent, that's a question for me to dodge. The short answer is you should ask the Home Secretary. But just so as we stay friends, I'll add, we naturally sent on a case history of the accused.
Am I allowed to see it?
We might be able to give you a rough summary, don't you think so, Dr. Berg?
Mm.
Dr. Berg was in charge of George when he was with us, Mr. Jones.
I was. Right from the beginning, Mr. Jones, you could see when he came in that he was a special case.
Special in what way?
Oh, of course, the relevant symptom. This terrific hatred of white women.
He didn't seem to hate them.
You knew him?
Yes, we met.
Whatever he said to you, Mr. Jones, this was the symptom he came in with. He told me that to see a white woman in semi-nude even made him feel physically sick. He was very ashamed of himself.
Did he come or was he sent?
He came of his own accord.
And what did you do for this interesting case?
That would take too long to describe, Mr. Jones. In any event, I wish not to talk of his condition, which is a technical matter, but this symptom, this physical nausea.
Well, he had the chance to see plenty of semi-nude English females almost every day.
How?
Well, nature of his job. A drummer for dance shows, cabaret.
Oh, I just say it's down in the notes, but we spend less time on what we call the content of our patient's psychotic processes than on the form. That is, however, technical again.
And George was psychotic?
Oh, yes.
Do you mean he was off his rocker when he was here and all right when he left?
We discharged him because he could be a useful member of society once more.
Without danger to other people?
So we thought.
He wasn't certified?
There was no reason to certify.
And now?
Yes. I would certify him now.
Look, aren't you sticking your neck out just a bit?
I always do. It's just a habit.
He's done a murder. If that makes him mad, it goes for every murderer. What do you think, Dr. Berg?
Possibly, Mr. Jones. I don't know.
Anyhow, it goes for George Umana. Still, I'm not judging him, thank the Lord. I just sent his papers to the Home Office.
It seemed to me I was involved in this thing now. And I went on half automatically looking for a story. There was a caretaker at the rehearsal rooms in Soho, where George Umana used to work, not far from Archer Street, the jazz drummer's stock exchange.
Yes, George used to keep his drums here, covered in a passage. Sometimes he'd be slipped a quid or 10 bob for the morning, and sometimes he'd do really well. People got to know him. He was a fair asset, he was. George was good. He got plenty of offers.
And how about the girls? How did he get on with them?
Well, there's a company downstairs, might tell you. They was here when George was pinched. Just happened to come back today. They'll be having a break in a minute, and then we'll go down.
Thanks, sir. I didn't get your surname.
My name's same as his. George. Never give no other to you gentlemen of the press. Hey, girls. This gent from the press.
Oh.
He wants to talk about coloured George.
Oh, poor George.
Why do you say that?
Because we're sorry for him, that's why.
They're getting up a petition on insanity grounds.
Look, if you're trying to get him off, you've got us on your side.
Yes.
Well, I'm not sure. If a sex murder proves a man's insane, then every sex murderer has an automatic let out.
Well, if you call it a let out into a loony bin.
Well, there can be worse places. I've just come from the one where George went to before. Why do you think he killed her?
She was peculiar. That's what.
Yeah.
I'm not getting anywhere with you two. You're not reacting right at all. You ought to stick up for the woman. Why do you stick up for him?
Oh, he was a good drummer and he didn't want an ordinary job. And that just shows George wasn't ordinary himself.
Yeah. You've got to treat him different.
Yeah.
Let him go around killing people.
He wouldn't do it again.
You're not helping, girls. You're not helping me at all. But I was wrong. The few lines I wrote about what they said, what show people think about the killing, and what the medical superintendent had said, were cabled straight back from South Africa to London front pages. This caused a stir. Africa News Service?
Ernest Madam speaking. Have you seen this morning's press?
That's what I'm paid for.
Well, better come round to my office quite soon, if you don't mind.
John, will you telephone Mr. Ernest Madam? He rang twice.
I've already spoken to him, Miss Sparrow.
Oh, good. Does he seem to think you might want to go round and see some of them?
To see who?
Chairman, I shouldn't wonder.
Mr. Nevin Fall.
Did Mr. Maiden say that?
Not he. That's just my guess. Mr. Maiden's very close.
I fancy you know this organization better than I do, Miss Sparrow. What is Ernest Maiden's exact job?
He runs a theatrical agency, and he's confidential clerk.
Who to?
Mr. Nevin Fall himself, and some of the others, to a lesser extent.
Hmm. Confidential clerk's a very old-fashioned title, isn't it?
This is a very old-fashioned firm, Mr. Johns. I suppose you'll be going round to Leicester Square now.
What did you want to see me for, Mr. Maiden?
Do you like my violas? They're a very underrated flower. Do you know just how much you've stuck your neck out, Mr. Johns?
What about George Umana?
How did you guess?
It was a good story. Rockingham in the American office put me onto it.
Well, the Americans didn't print it.
Oh, of course not. It's local news.
Perhaps it's the local angle you don't appreciate. I know you're new and have the confidence of youth. I don't know whether you've got any excuses.
Well, when it's a question of policy, I'd always rather talk to the policymakers.
Well, that's what you may have to do before you're much older, my boy.
Well, when can it be arranged? Have you Mr. Fall's engagement book?
Oh, dear. It's not as easy as that.
Well, that's his office through there, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Like to see inside? As you see, the chairman's chair is unoccupied this morning. Mr. Nevin has several companies to attend to. Of course, what they can't understand over there is why we of all people, should suddenly start defending a coloured murderer.
Practically every London paper had it on the front page. Quoted from us, cabled back. Does that make it a good story or not?
Oh, I know I'm in another section. I'm in the entertainment business and you're in journalism. Lovely perfume, these flowers. But it always seems to me you chaps are so crude. You don't ask yourself whether it's good publicity or bad. Any sort of publicity is okay with you.
Well, I'd rather not discuss it now. Perhaps when Mr. Hall comes back.
Ah, you think you'd rather talk to the boss? Well, I'll forgive you. I know you're new in these parts. You'll have to talk to Mr. George Newbold at the Afrikaans Bank near the Mansion House.
I can't think why you got me down to Leicester Square when the real appointment's in the city. I never understand it, Alfred.
Oh, we just wanted a preliminary chat.
Well, when am I supposed to see Mr. Newbold?
12:30. Of course, if it had been a question of the sack, I'm still empowered to give it to you. And good day, old son.
Good day to you, Mr.
Richard Johns, Mr. Newbold.
Oh, of course, the News Digest. Sit you down. You haven't been to see us at the bank here before, if I mistake not. No, tell me all about it.
Well, there's not much to tell. I understand there's a policy objection to my story this morning. All I can say is it's a good story, as you can see from every front page.
Oh, come. We don't want to lose you, and I shall refuse to quarrel.
Do you agree with Mr. Maiden that I got bad publicity for the African News Service?
I never agree with Mr. Maiden. It didn't do us any harm in London. It may even have done us good, the Union being more liberal than London for once. We'll get over it all right. There are a few testy old gentlemen over there, but, well, there are always a few testy old gentlemen.
Have I your support in running the news service without worrying too much about them?
The service is young, and you've been running it brilliantly. There's even been talk of a directorship for you. But if you want to get round the testy old gentlemen or get quick ones past them, you'd better keep in touch pretty closely.
And I should regard you as the liaison.
Between ourselves. Between ourselves. Come in.
I beg pardon, sir. There was a message on the telephone for Mr. Johns. The gentleman will ring you at your office later. And Mr. Frederick Van Berg.
You haven't forgotten, my dear Rich, that I got this job for you for a purpose. Diamond-bearing gravels. Remember?
Freddy, that's phony.
I want you to meet this chap, Jim Flaherty. You remember, Rich. He's the nephew of Tommy Blair, the geologist who was killed in the crash at Marble Arch. He's an Australian, an art dealer. Goes in for primitive stuff.
Freddie, I...
Art is giving a party tonight to launch a new business enterprise. At his house in Regent's Park.
You know how much I hate parties.
Lisa will be coming. She'll be expecting you, Rich.
Hello.
Very much an art dealer's evening, isn't it? All the world is here. I even caught a glimpse of George Newbold in the distance talking with Freddy.
George Newbold? Well, where is he now?
Over there with the bald, shining dome.
Mm. He's like an actor, typecast, a rugged part.
Well, he can be fatherly as well as rugged. Ah, here comes our hostess. Susanna, isn't it?
The party joke seems to be to call her Susanna and the Elders. Well, she can't be much more than about 20.
Mrs. Fardy, I want you to meet...
Oh, do call me Susanna. And you're Rich Johns, aren't you? We colonials get on Christian name terms pretty soon.
Well, Susanna, you haven't probably met my friend Lisa Stevens, have you? Lisa's a bit in your world, you know. She's Dashwood Wilkie's secretary.
Oh, the top international art dealer. Jim's always trying to get hold of him.
Well, he's in Cairo at present, I'm afraid, but...
Oh, never mind. You must both come over and see Jim's girl.
Jim's?
That's what we call her. The African wood carving is going to market. She's only about 8 inches high.
Just look at her. Isn't she a beaut? I say the man who made her must have been seeing American movies. Notice how the wood being in two colors makes her still more a black beauty for not being quite black.
Jim's found a way of reproducing it, too. They can do it absolutely perfectly.
She'll be a terrific hit. Sell like hot cakes. We need some money. This is my number two scheme.
Oh, what's number one?
To enable African governments to buy back their stuff. The big treasures, Effie Head. You know, those African bronzes that are so early, nobody knows who made them. All the things they had in Berlin and so on. That's what this party's for.
Jim's firm collected a tremendous amount of stuff, mostly loans and options. Glad insurance.
Ah, so you're all met together. Splendid, splendid. I'm glad you're able to come here. May I have that carving a moment, Jim? Thank you. Now, gather round. Gather round, everybody. This is the game. Now, see, I place this lady in the hands of this gentleman here. Will you close your eyes, sir? I want you to stroke the lady. We're all going to take turns. Nobody need get jealous.
The old free association game,
Fred. Something of the sort. Now, sir, have you got hold of the lady firmly? Are your eyes closed? Does everybody agree he's closed his eyes properly?
Yes.
Good. Then, sir, stroke her. Stroke gently. I warn you, sir, at a given point, I'm going to say stop. Say the first word that comes into your head. Now, Mrs. Flaherty will give the signal. Both thumbs up, Susanna, when I'm to say stop.
Righto, Freddy.
Now, sir, you again. You are stroking the nape of the lady's neck. Now her shoulders, down to the elbows. Can you feel your way? Stop. Thank you, Susanna and the elders. Keep your eyes closer. I'm going to count three. On the count of three, say the first word that comes into your head. One. Two. Are you ready? Three. Word, please. Come along now. Your word, Mr. George Newbold.
Word, Mr. Van Berg? Well, that's easy. The word is blackmail.
Do you think it was a success, the party? Lisa, Rich, what do you think?
Oh, of course it was, Susan. Except for Freddy making an ass of himself. Half a mo while I look for the whiskey.
You must be pretty fed up about what happened tonight, Susanna.
Why, what did happen?
Lisa means that exchange of broadsides between Freddy and George Newbold, don't you, Lisa?
Yes, I mean you can't afford a quarrel with the Afrikaans Bank, can you?
But was there a quarrel? I thought Mr. Newbold was awfully sweet.
Freddy was telling me about Jim's uncle. Wasn't he a prospector for diamonds in Africa?
You mean Uncle Tom Blair? For some reason, we always called him that. In full, his name
we?
Was... Yes, we're sort of cousins, Jim and I. I can remember Uncle Tom Blair, too, though Jim laughed his head off when I say so.
Too right, I do. Whiskey, everybody?
Yes, sir.
Yes, yes.
You couldn't have been more than four when he got bumped off.
I was five and a half, so there.
I suppose you all thought he was going to make the family fortune.
I'll say we did. Mind you, Uncle Tom Blair made about three fortunes in his time.
I can remember my parents talking in their bedroom next door to mine when I was a kid. We used to say he'd found all the diamonds in the world.
And he damn nearly did at that.
Oh, the devil.
Freddy here, Rich.
Listen, Freddy, it's 8:15. I only got back from the party at 3 a.m.
But I've important news, Rich.
I've been on the phone to Jim Flaherty, and we're forming a limited company. I'm not appearing, but both Flahertys will be directors, and I'm empowered to ask you to be one. It won't cost you anything.
Except my beauty sleep. Oh, for cripe's sake, Freddy, ring back after the weekend.
The company will be called Blair Properties Limited, by way of respect to the old man. We're seeing a lawyer this morning to find out how far we can go in stating the aims of the company. It'd be nice to say diamond washing. You've only to shake up old George Newbold of his crowd.
He didn't seem terribly shaken last night.
That is the cup. And Rich, there's something more you can do for us through Africa News Service.
What?
What do you think you're putting your job for?
No idea.
Why, to float news of the company when it's formed.
Is that what Newbold meant by blackmail?
I'll meet you for morning coffee and explain. Patisserie Pompeii at 11.
I don't have morning coffee on Saturdays. It's our busiest day.
Okay, Rich. All you will have to do is cable a little paragraph in the ordinary way of news. I'll bring you a text after you see the lawyer. It will say what the company is and what it intends to do. That's all.
Sorry, Freddy. I refuse point blank to have any hand in this. Goodbye.
Call for you, Mr. John. Can I put the lady through?
Thank you, Miss Barrow. Hello? Who is that?
Good morning, Richard.
Lisa, what the...
Rich, I hear you've been talking to Freddy.
Oh, you do? Listen, my dear, I don't have a love life on Saturday mornings. I'm funny that way.
I'm coming down to Fleet Street, Rich. I've got to see you.
Oh, not at the office, then, for goodness sake. In the pub opposite. Oh, Miss Spiro, I'll be in the Mermaid for about half an hour if anybody wants me. The downstairs bar.
I know you hate me butting in, Rich, but I think you ought to send that cable about Jim's company.
Lisa, I let you come down because I realized I'd been too abrupt on the phone. I like Jim. I love Susanna. I'm thick as thieves with Freddy, but my instinct is to opt out of this, and I'm going to follow my instinct.
You're being singularly unimaginative, Richard.
All right, Lisa. I'll do what Freddy wants, if you promise to marry me as soon as you can get divorced.
Rich, you can't put it like that.
No, but I do put it like that. It's my turn to blackmail.
Oh, Mr. John. Thank goodness you're still here.
Why, Miss Spiro. Well, Lisa, I don't think you've met my efficient secretary.
How do you do? Mr. John's story is broken. I didn't know what to do. Mr. Rockingham sent his cable across urgently.
Richard, what is it?
It looks... Looks like an East German push. It might be a frontier incident. It might be only smart aleck journalism. I'll have to wait anyway.
You're not sending anything?
Not yet.
Suppose Joburg cables while you're out.
Well, leave it till I come back.
Very good, Mr. Jones.
Have a quick one, Miss Spiro. Then possibly I'll come back with you.
Not in a working morning. Thank you.
Is it serious, Richard?
Yes. No. Which?
The news from Germany.
No. Yes. Oh, I don't know. I'm not talking about Germany. I'm talking about us.
Might be the beginning of a war.
I'm still talking about us.
Oh, you seem to be getting hopelessly involved.
That's what I hoped.
Don't be ridiculous, Rich.
Well, have another drink. Maybe while we're talking here, the world's going up in smoke. But we're Blitz babies. We know it doesn't matter how many bombers there are in the sky. It's ego reinforcement we want, not reinforced concrete.
You'll come and talk to Freddy. The Flaherty's are expecting you. When shall I tell them you'll come?
Tell Freddy I'll come to supper at the Flaherty's 9 o'clock. That's if they'll ask me to supper. There'll still be time to send a cable for the Sunday papers.
Oh, yes, Freddy wants the Sunday papers. He says it gives longer for the news to sink in.
You know, Lisa, you make me feel like Samson being shorn. I wonder if he enjoyed it as much as I do.
Ladies and gentlemen, pray silence for Mr. Van Berg. He's now going to read us his great communique, aren't you, Freddy?
Here, Rich can read it for himself. You see, Rich, it says simply that a company's been set up of diamond prospectors with a view to exploiting certain unspecified diamond-bearing gravels. I've put in a bit about Tommy Blair.
Just within the law, as long as we don't specify places. Why, it might be in Nigeria. But I bet the law officers in Cape Town will be going through it with a tooth comb tomorrow morning.
If it gets in.
You will send it, won't you, Rich?
I'll send it, all right. Lisa and I have a bargain about that. But with this German crisis...
I don't know anything about any bargain.
Flag here.
Is Richard Johns there, please?
Oh, yes, he's here. For you, Rich.
Thanks. Who is this?
Dirk Rockingham.
Oh, you've heard something?
Oh, just had a tinkle from one of our contacts in diplomatic circles. If it's true, it kills the whole story. Waiting confirmation now. Better catch a cab straight over.
I'll be with you, Dirk. Better give me your communique, Freddy. I've got to get over to the American offices. Turned out there was no frontier clash after all. It was just a pack of lies. But that's newspaper work. However, I sent Freddy's cable. And on Monday, waiting at my office, was an invitation from George Newbold.
Mr. Ernest Maiden was on the line, Mr. Johns. He had a message from Mr. Newbold to say would you care to join him for a car ride through Epping Forest. They will be here in 10 minutes.
Would I care to? That means I can refuse if I want.
Mr. Maiden didn't give any indication.
Thank you, Miss Barrow. Tell me when the car arrives.
I don't suppose you know Epping Forest. Nobody does.
I seem to remember it as a nice forest. Never.
William Morris called it this strange, unexampled, and most romantic wood. He was born there, like me.
Well, I thought you were a Scotsman.
By parentage. But this rather scruffy end of London is my stamping ground. I come here when I want to think. Glades of hornbeam and beech. I want to talk to you, but you'll have a chance to look round. You'll be absolutely shaken merely to look at it in this sun. Glades of hornbeam, my boy. That's what you'll see. I'll see something different. When I was a kid, we used to roam about the forest in gangs, particularly at weekends. It wasn't natural history we went in for, at least not what most people understand by the phrase. We were sordid little brutes. Peeping Toms. Seen much of your friends, the Flahertys, and what's his name, Freddy Van Berg, lately?
I see them from time to time.
Here's the forest now. Glades of hornbeam and, as I told you, small boys' natural history lessons. Stop the car. I've been hoping for this little talk for some time, Richard. I'm still not sure you've got things as clear as they ought to be. Now, do you see how the forest piles up in the sun?
Quite a spectacle.
As you know, we're in Essex now. Ever study history? In some ways, our times are rather like Queen Elizabeth I's. We haven't got a Shakespeare, oh dear no, but we have got rising prices, and we've got treasure. You see, it's the official theory nowadays that the extraordinary things that happened in the first Elizabethan age were caused by its being an era of rapidly rising prices, brought about by the income of treasure from South America. Well, now, the same thing's happening with us on a bigger scale from South Africa. The inflow of gold and diamonds. Well, the scale's been colossal, as I dare say you know. And world prices, consequently, are going up all the time. Have been since the start of the century. Now, what you must understand, my boy, is that when you come to an organization like ours, you're approaching the people who control the rising prices. And they determine everything else in the world.
Some prices are falling.
Not diamonds. Oh, there'll be local rises and falls from one year to another, but a steady overall rise each decade.
Mr. Newbold.
George, if you don't mind, my boy.
George, then. You hinted about my friends, the Flahertys and Freddie Van Berg.
Mm-hmm.
Their diamond company and so on doesn't find favor, I imagine, with your principles. If the treasure, as you call it, flowed too quickly, it would spoil things.
If it flowed at its natural speed, it would spoil everything. You're interested in diamonds, all right. Let your gravel-bearing geologist get busy, and within a year or two, diamonds of 20 carats, why, they'd be as cheap as glass beads.
Diamonds are quite fun for their own sake, really. It would be nice if everybody had some.
And cheap oysters and champagne for everybody, too, I suppose. I believe your friend Jim Flaherty has been trying to get in touch with me. Perhaps he wants us to buy him off. Hmm? Well, you might tell him there's nothing doing. Nothing at all. Drive on, chauffeur.
Of course, I saw it all plainly now. Freddie had gone all this long way round, getting me a job with Herzog, because for his purposes, a news item cabled by African News Digest was rather like sending an anonymous blackmailing circular to the big diamond combine. But still, the thought of being George Newbold's stooge and informer revolted me. I didn't quite know what to do. I had to ask someone's advice. Lisa's, if possible. But Lisa was cagey and wouldn't meet me till I'd bribed her with a seat at the opera.
Any opera tickets, Rich? Didn't know you were musical.
Oh, Jim, you startled me. Yes, I'm taking Lisa to tonight.
You're going to the opera and I'm going bankrupt.
No joking, Jim.
Dead serious, Rich. There's a whole series of things been happening to me. The landlord suddenly descends with a repairing order on my art gallery. I took no notice, just laughed. It wasn't till I got his lawyer's letter I realized he meant every word of it.
Hard luck.
Luck? Listen, what about this? Bank manager sent for me yesterday, calls in the overdraft. No notice, nothing. Just plain blank bloody rudeness. You don't see any connection?
Frankly, no.
Then to cap it all, remember that pretty little African statuette girl we were going to town with? I was going to have about 1 million replicas made. Getting them in every suburban front window. I've got my first consignment of wood. I've got my permit for the second. Now I find the consignment requisitioned and the permit cancelled.
Well, with all this, do you think you're wise in complicating your business just now?
What with? You mean diamonds?
Exactly.
I always play high stakes, Rich. So long.
About Covent Garden intervals, there's the really excellent hors d'oeuvres you can buy to go with your dry martini.
Yes, if you can get through the crowd.
I've got to have something out to do, Lisa.
Oh, you obviously can't do it here. What about these eats you mentioned?
Rich, Lisa. Thank God I remembered you'd be here.
Jim, how on earth did you get in without tickets?
I wangled it somehow. You know the latest? The big deal between the government here and the government of Nigeria for the Efi head. It's been overturned. We're really bankrupt now.
Calm down, Jim. There's surely some mistake.
No mistake at all. Why, the deal was arranged months ago. Only the final details to be hammered out. And now suddenly, it's all off.
But Jim, there must be an explanation.
Well, Freddie has one. We're all meeting at my place tonight, later on.
The explanation is simple. George Newbold has been busy, and behind him is Nevin Falls. Jim and I have been talking it over, and we're quite agreed the only defense is the offensive, which will be taken, as usual, by our friend Rich.
Oh, no, you don't. Not me again.
Who else? Haven't you been appointed London Features Editor, in addition to your other glories?
Features?
Freddie had in mind a series of articles.
Oh, by a well-known professor of geology. Jim here has one taped, who will write the truth about the diamond-bearing gravels and scare the daylights out of Newbold and Fall. Then an article by a South African historian to tell the whole story of Tommy Blair and the 1928 diamond rush. And, of course, Tommy Blair's so very accidental demise.
And my job, I suppose, will be to get these articles somehow into our papers.
You've hit it. As features editor, that should present no difficulties to you at all, my dearie.
But one afternoon, Lisa rang me from the Flaherty house, saying that Jim had disappeared.
Jim didn't come home last night, and the shop in Burlington Arcade has no news of him either.
Oh, I wouldn't worry too much, Susanna. Probably Jim was called out of town and just forgot to tell you.
There's more to it than that, Rich. What about the man who called on Jim, Susanna?
What man's this?
Perhaps there wasn't a man. You see, Jim's been drinking rather a lot lately, and, well, I didn't take too much notice of what he said when he came home at night. Anybody might get a persecution complex with the things he's been going through.
He was imagining things a bit?
He thought they were after him, you see.
Well, they?
Well, George Newbold and Nevin Fall, obviously.
And in what way were they after him, Susanna?
Well, the other night, for instance, he had a wild story. He said, and he was quite coherent this time, he came home and said a man had been to see him.
Why did the man come to see him?
He said he'd been hired to kill Jim.
Did he want Jim to buy him off?
No, I don't think so. Jim didn't say so, anyhow.
Well, what was his object, then?
Just to warn him, I suppose. I'm sorry, Rich, I know I'm not telling this very well.
You said Jim told you what the man was like.
And his name. His name was Bones.
A Victorian name for Negroes. Was he a Negro?
I don't know. I didn't think of him as a Negro. Jim just said a man. And if you don't say black man, you assume white usually, don't you? But the name, Bones, definitely stuck in my head.
Can you remember anything else?
I do remember Jim said Bones wasn't furtive. He was just stocky and stood on the balls of his feet. Always stood on the balls of his feet.
And how was he supposed to be going to kill Jim?
I think he did say how, but I don't remember. It may have been something to do with cars. Yes, a garage came into it, I'm sure. Definitely a garage.
In the end, we decided not to ring the police just yet. But 2 days later, Lisa rang me up to say that they had been to the morgue. A body had been found in the Thames near Wapping.
It was Jim, darling. It was Jim. Truly it was.
Did Susanna identify him too?
No. No, she just looked blank, Rich. Oh, it was horrible. You'd think she'd lost her memory. The police doctor was kind. He said the wives often go like that. Blank.
Where is Susanna now?
The doctor gave her a shot of something. She's asleep. And, oh, dear, I'm supposed to go to the coroner's court almost immediately to see someone call the coroner's beagle.
You are Mrs. Lisa Stevens, a married woman living at 125 Paddington Street, West 1. On the second instant, you accompanied Mrs. O'Flaherty.
No, sorry.
Then the name's Flaherty, officer.
Oh, I beg pardon, sir. You accompanied Mrs. Flaherty to the River Police Station at Wapping, where you identified the body of a drowned man as the husband of the said Mrs. O'Flaherty. Beg pardon, Flaherty. Now, had you any reason to suppose that the deceased intended to do harm to himself?
Well, he talked about being threatened.
Threatened?
Why bring that up, Lisa? It's all nonsense. We'll only be making fools of ourselves.
Now, just a minute, sir. It sounds as if we may have to adjourn. We don't want to, but we may have to.
You mean you've finished with us for now?
No. I mean the inquest. May have to adjourn for another 8 days, maybe more.
Oh, why do I always have to open my damn big mouth?
It is your duty, madam, to give the police all the help and information that is in your power.
There was a formal inquest where Lisa identified the body, and then the coroner adjourned for 10 days. It was over in 5 minutes. I put Lisa and Susanna into a taxi with the idea of going straight back to the office. But then a hunch got into me. And I went instead to the rehearsal rooms back of Shaftesbury Avenue to interview the caretaker, George.
Now, don't tell me I never forget a face. Gotcha. The newspaper bloke what wrote about coloured George, right? There, you see? Well, what can I do for you?
Have you ever heard of a man called Burns?
Well, another darky. No, one was enough. Still, you got George Umana off, you did.
Still in the mental home, is he? Have you been to see him?
Catch me going to one of them places. One of the girls went once, though, of a Sunday. She said they're doing him prayers. Poor old George.
And you don't know anyone called Burns, eh?
Well, not by that name. Well, it's a small village. You could ask round the pubs, or there's the Sphinx, you know, the nude review theatre. or the caff where the showgirls go, or there's the two garages.
A garage?
Yeah, that's right. There's two of them.
Thanks, George. I just remembered something somebody said. A garage. Excuse me, landlord.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of garages around here, aren't there?
Well, you know the big one, surely. I grant you might have missed the little one. It's in the yard behind.
I asked because I was hoping to meet a friend of mine who's a garage hand. A chap called Bones.
Sorry, can't say. You know anyone with the name of Bones, Jack?
Try the commissionaire of the Sting Theatre, sir. He knows Bones.
No, not me, sir. But my mate inside, he'll know Bones. You go in and ask him.
Then may I pass?
Not without paying, you can't. Seats at 13 and 6, sir.
Oh, all right. Here's a quid.
Oh, thank you, sir. My mate's got to be downstairs for between shows, see? The girls can't always handle this rush for the front rows. Customers like to see the show from close, too. We've had to stop them climbing over the seats to get there. Proper Grand National they'd have left to themselves. My mate's there to stop it, see? You'll find him there between shows.
And I've got to sit through the show to find him?
Well, you've paid your money, ain't you?
Clearly the worst punishment.
Don't you?
Ever heard of a man called Bones?
Bones, no. No, you won't find him here. You'll find him in the horse meat shop in Terminus Street.
A long queue for the horse meat, is it not, mister? Must be 50-odd.
Yes. I was wondering whether I'd dare jump it. I want to see the shop owner about something.
Shall I tell you how to go about it? And you can do a trick for me, same time. Now, take this sacking bag, and all you've got to do is to walk past those 50 patient people, stopping your ears to their insulting remarks and saying, I've an appointment in the office. Go through the shop, up the stairs, and that's the office. Then you say you come from Mr. O'Donnelly of 229 Park Lane, and that he's vexed the meat wasn't delivered yesterday. But that's his regular order. And you say he sent you to fetch it personally. The order's for £8, and here's the quid to pay.
But I don't know you from St. Patrick, and you don't know me.
Ah, you wouldn't be refusing a kind deed to a stranger. Besides, I'll give you a rake off.
What if I run off with your quid?
Oh, I'd be waiting right here.
All right, I'll have a go.
You'd be obliging a grateful creature. I'd go myself, but lately they've got to know me complexion.
O'Donnelly. Yes, here's the entry. The meat was delivered yesterday. No, as you were. It was cancelled. Order cancelled.
But he wants the order. He's vexed.
Well, I'd check with the delivery man if you wait.
Delivery man's out at this time. You ought to know that.
Then you'll have to see the boss. He won't be a minute.
Be no horses left next year, there won't. I don't know what we're going to do. We're killing them in hundreds. It's a massacre. Mr. O'Donnelly's order? 229 Park Lane? Oh, just you go down to the shop, and they'll fill that bag up for you.
And Mr. O'Donnelly will be most grateful. Are you, you don't happen to employ anyone called Bones, I suppose?
Bones? The driver?
I expect so.
No, he's left. Went to Marston Battle. Firm called Bickman. Bones dead.
Oh, here's your bag. £8 heavier, one drop of blood on the outside.
That's a good Samaritan, you are. And in return for your kind offices, may I slip you this half dollar? It's the half of what I'd be making myself. I'd be off on me rounds after a drink. I sell me beef for 2 and 9, the half pounds. Hey, do you know what it says in the Bible? Despoil the Philistines. Did they ever tell you me mother was a Protestant? It also says, feed me sheep.
Went to Marston Battle, a firm called Bickman's. But when I got there, a 2-mile walk through a shower of rain, I was told,
Bones,
Oh, he's gone, got himself another job.
You don't happen to know where?
Garage down by the station, about 2 miles back along the road.
Yes, I know. I've just come from there.
Barnes? Oh, he'll be having his tea.
You know when he'll be back?
Well, not till the business train comes in, around 7. Oh. Well, you can go round to his sister's if you like. That's where he has his tea.
Is it far?
Oh, it's about 100 yards. You see them Royal Cottages over there? It's the second one down.
Oh, good afternoon. Could I see Mr. Burns, please?
Oh, yes. I'm his sister. Bill's in the back, if you'll come this way.
But, Dad, Bill Man's dog is a corgi, isn't
he? I tell you, it's a mongrel. I know it looks like a corgi, but it's a mongrel all the same. You've got to do this properly. There's no point in it if you're cheating. Yes, Millie, what is it?
Gentlemen to see you, Bill.
Oh, yes, well, come in. Sit down.
Dad?
Yes, that's all right. Go on, off it, off it. Bear in mind, though, there's not many dog spotters got a papillion on their cars.
Come on.
Go on, then. Well, that was my eldest on this dog spotting lark, you know. Spotting dogs instead of Indians.
I bought you the oil lamps, Bill.
Oh, for Christ's sake. Do we have to have that stinking thing in here whilst we're eating? It's summer. Won't be dark for hours yet.
There's no stink. I just cleaned it. Oh, I'll take it away if you want.
Well, I do. My mother's idea, you see, these oil lamps just won't have electric. We're the only house in the row, not wired. The old woman's that ruddy superstitious still. I mean, she's 80 odd, getting on a bit. Mind passing the mustard pickle, please? Now.
Mr. Burns, I've come from a Mrs. Flaherty. Does her name mean anything? Mrs. Flaherty seemed to think you did a good turn to her husband. You tipped her husband off about something, didn't you? Warned him.
You know Flaherty?
Yes, that's why.
All right. Come on.
You've not finished the tea.
Well, better all. I won't come along with me. I've got a car in the garage. You know what I told Jim Flaherty?
No.
Well, you're a liar.
Why are we pulling up here?
You knew I tipped off your friend Flaherty. You said so yourself.
Well?
Well, I was slated to do that job myself, see? And you know who hired me.
I've heard a story and I don't believe it.
Oh. Clever type, eh?
Well, why are we turning round?
We're going back to the garage.
You were taking me to someone, weren't you? Was it somebody in that end house?
I've changed my mind. I don't like clever types. What did you do in the war?
Navy.
Yeah. Well, you ought to have known better. Officer?
Yes.
Well, never believe what you're told.
Look here, you can't do this. Take me back, whatever it was. For goodness sake, finish what you started, man.
There's a train back to London in 2 minutes.
I'll choose my own train, thanks very much.
You know, so in the Navy, they went in for a system of applied psychology. I mean, if you want to get people to do things for you, it's wise to put on a politeness act. Sweet voice, don't shout, acquire habits of command. That kind of art.
Mr. Burns, please have a heart. You see, Jim Flaherty was a great friend of mine. And it seems you did him a good turn. I don't quite understand how. Can't you see? For his wife's sake and everything, I have to find out what happened.
Oh, all right, we'll go back. This way. Come on. Evening, Mr. Wainwright. Is he upstairs?
Well, I've not seen him. Door's open. Go and look if you like.
All right. In you go, mister.
You're not coming in yourself?
I shall be back to fetch you. The room you want is on the first floor front.
Come in. Jim! Come in and shut the door, Rich. So you've smelled me out, have you?
Jim, of all my...
Come out of the window. There's a good view out there. You can see all the way to the Devil's Punch Bowl.
Do you realize poor Susanna thinks you're dead?
What else could I do? Nevin Four was after me. He detailed Bones for the job, but he hit on a soft character. That was his bad luck. Bones came and told me all about it. So we reckoned I'd better lie low for a bit. Don't believe me, do you? Never believe anything, you newspaper bloke.
I suppose you did the wisest thing.
Besides, I had to get away and think. Freddy's smart, but is he smart enough for Newbold and Four? I had to work things out, don't you see, Rich?
But couldn't you have tried to let Susanna know?
What sort of bloody fool do you take me for? Have a beer. The bottle's empty.
Do you want a drink?
Yeah. There's a free house on the corner.
Oh, come on, then.
No, you go and get us a quart. The rain's stopped. I never go out if I can help it.
I just thought to get your lodger a bottle of beer, Mr. Wainwright.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you're looking after him. He's pretty ill, isn't he?
Ill? No, no, wait a minute. Now you mention it, there is something I don't like. Fool, I was not to see it afore. You better take him away.
Oh, that's just what I want to do, but give me time. I'll try and persuade him to go home,
but... Persuade, hell, just take him. I don't like it. I got my missus to think of. Is he, safe, left?
I'll get a doctor if you like, but I can't before tomorrow.
You get him away tomorrow, that's all I'm asking.
How'd you find him, mister?
He's suffering from delusions.
Is that so?
He has some mad idea that people in London, business competitors, want to get at him. I've tried to talk him out of it, and I'm coming back to fetch him home, if possible, tomorrow.
Well, here's the station, mister. 10 minutes you've got before the train goes.
Am I to believe Flaherty when he says you warned him? Well... out with it, please. All right. Well, just answer this one. You see my point, don't you? In taking him back home where he can be properly looked after.
He's in good digs.
Yes, I know, but he's got a wife.
Well, it's up to you, then.
Look, what were you warning him about? Whatever it was seems to have sent him off his rocker, so do try to give me some clue. I may have to tell the doctor.
If he's off his nut, you'll be protecting him from himself, won't you? Now, you got your ticket. Time you got your train.
Hello, Lisa.
Rich, come in. Oh, where have you been all day? We were expecting you ages ago.
Lisa, listen. Take a tight hold of yourself. I've just seen Jim. He's alive.
Rich, what are you saying? Susanna, please, go upstairs, darling, while I ask Rich. He said Jim was alive. I heard him.
It's true, my dear. Only, you see, he's not well. He thinks he's hiding.
You mean he's mad?
Oh, of course not. He's obviously had a sort of breakdown, though. You'll have to go to him.
I can't. I couldn't, Susanna, darling. Oh, all right, I'll go, I suppose. It's just physical, isn't it, Rich? Like having a temperature. They'll be able to cure him quite easily, won't they?
Of course they will. Listen, I'll make all the arrangements. We'll hire a car and all go down together tomorrow. But next morning, Lisa rang to say Susanna had broken down, and I'd have to fetch Jim on my own. So I telephoned Freddy to come and have breakfast at his blessed patisserie Pompeii. So, Freddy, I'm going down to Marston Battle on the very next train, and you're coming with me.
What for?
To bring Jim back, of course.
And pass that basket, please. I must have another of these crescent rolls, don't they call them here?
And, Freddy, don't think you're going to get out of it, either.
It occurs to me, didn't you do that wonderful story about the sex murderer called George something?
Mm, what if I did?
You must have got to know them awfully well at the Loony Bin.
Where is this leading to, Freddy?
My dear Rich, Jim Flaherty is, of course, bats. He's obviously crazy. So why not first consult with your friend, the medical superintendent, who has practiced in the handling of such cases? We have a case, Doctor, in which we think you might be interested. A very great friend of ours who has the delusion that he's being pursued and probably will be killed by the diamond firms from South Africa because he thinks he has the secret of diamond-bearing gravel.
Now, one moment.
Accordingly, this friend staged so convincing a disappearance that it deceived his own wife, who thought he had committed suicide. And, indeed, that's officially what he has done.
I'm afraid, Mr...
My name is Van Berg, Christian name Frederick. Now, what we came to ask you, Doctor, is whether this fascinating case might not be added to your collection. apart from which you and Mr. Johns here have exchanged services in the past.
And where did all this happen, please?
In London.
Yes, but the exact address is...
Our unfortunate friend's address is Kemp Terrace, Regent's Park.
And where is he supposed to have committed suicide?
The body of the unknown man was found... Where was it found, Rich?
In Wapping.
And the patient at this moment is where?
At a place called Marston Battle.
Good. Now, Mr. Van Berg, you'll understand that in public psychiatric practice, we have to fix our boundaries and be quite meticulous in keeping to them.
Oh, of course, Doctor.
Naturally. So, when I tell you that not one of the addresses you have mentioned comes within my catchment area, I'm sure you can see that with the best will in the world, there's nothing I can do for you.
But, Doctor...
Shut up a moment, please. There was a woman doctor, sir, in charge of George Umana's case. I wonder if she would help by giving us a few tips on how best to persuade my friend to come home.
Dr. Berg, you mean? Oh, I don't see why not. I'll send you to her.
Oh, how nice to see you back again, Mr. Jones. Did you come to inquire after George Umana?
Oh, not really, Dr. Berg. It's a private worry.
Your name is Berg. Mine is Frederick Van Berg. No doubt we're distant relatives. But you've got my friend's name slightly wrong. John, not Joe. So in the end, I have succeeded, Rich. This Dr. Berg will come with us tomorrow to see this Mr. Bones and help bring Jim back.
Myself, I'd say you played every single card wrong.
Oh, nonsense, Rich. You're jealous, that's all. Now to business. In my briefcase here, I have the first of your series of articles.
What articles?
The ones you're going to get printed for us. See, open the folder. Now here, The Romance of Diamond Bearing Gravels. A good commercial headline, eh? Now read on, the first paragraph.
So a poor farmer's child found playthings scattered on a river bank which a little prince might covet. And the boy might have skimmed the face of the river with one little white stone... that it was worth more than his father's farm. Freddie, you never wrote this.
That is from an account of the state of affairs on the banks of the Orange and Vaal rivers in 1868. Then comes the subheading. Are there places like this today?
And if it's published, what do you hope to gain?
George Newbold sent a message, didn't he, when he took you for that forest ride? He wasn't making any offers yet. Eh? So let us take another step. And he will.
Mr. Bones, won't you sit in the easy chair and relax? Do, please. Just as a favor to me. Good. Now, you've probably gathered I'm a doctor... And these friends of yours have called me in about the case of your friend, Mr. Flaherty.
He's not my friend.
But you helped him, didn't you?
He wanted to go out of London. I found him some digs.
And I'm sure you found him some nice digs.
That's right, Doctor. They're some of the nicest digs in Marston Battle.
But he's married, and digs are for a single man. We are come to ask Mr. Flaherty to come home. Will he object, do you think?
Well, that's for him to say. I'm not the one to interfere between man and wife.
But I understood it was a business matter that brought him here, not a domestic upheaval.
People do get mixed up in things, don't they?
I understand that Mr. Flaherty's story is that you said you had been hired to kill him. That surely cannot be true.
Well, some things are so true, you can never get anybody to believe them.
Well, goodbye, Mr. Bones. And thank you. We'll let you know the result.
Half a sec, Doctor.
Yes, Mr. Bowen.
I'd like to talk to you privately sometime, if you wouldn't mind.
That's what I thought. Mm. Yes, we must arrange it.
What did you make of Bones, Dr. Bird?
A very confused type. Let us hope Mr. Flaherty is less.
Wake up, Jim. It's visitors there.
Good Lord. Where have you lot sprung from?
Freddy.
In person. And this is Dr. Berg. You're looking well, Jim.
I'm feeling bloody awful. Sorry, Doctor. Just one gets generally fed up.
I understand. Perhaps you are tired of it here.
Too right I am.
In that case, we thought you wouldn't mind coming back with us. Your wife wants to see you naturally. What about packing?
So you're a doctor, eh?
I am, yes.
What sort?
A psychiatrist.
Do you know this feeling? That it doesn't matter whether you're in one place or the other. Either of them. There's no ruddy wear.
Yes. Yes, I know that feeling. Now, shall I help you to pack?
Doctor.
Yes.
Will I be all right?
Is there any reason why you shouldn't be?
Don't seem to be able to sleep.
Is it hard to get to sleep? Or do you wake up suddenly?
Suddenly. After about 3 hours. Then never sleep another wink.
I'll give you some pills. You oughtn't to be going through this. Eh, you ought to have asked before.
But I hadn't got you before.
Yes, but I give your wife some pills for you. She'll look after you.
So Jim settled in all right in the end.
He greeted Susanna just as if he'd come back from an ordinary weekend. I last saw her giving him the pills Dr. Berg prescribed.
Mm-hmm. She must be relieved, to say the least. Well, drink up, Lisa, and let's celebrate. Oh, waiter, bring another bottle of wine, please.
Very good, sir.
What's in that folder you've been carrying about all evening?
Freddie's articles, The Romance of Diamonds, all ready to go off by airmail tomorrow.
Richard, if Freddie and co. did start picking up diamonds on the riverbank, just like that, would it really mean diamonds would become as cheap as glass?
So George Newbold said.
And will those articles do the trick? I mean, make Newbold buy us out?
That's what Freddie thinks.
I'd be careful about publishing them, Rich. Don't do anything that'll get you into trouble.
George Newbold is such an old maneuverer. I like him, but I'd like to outmaneuver him, too.
And Nevin Fall?
I had a message from him today to ring his office before sending off the articles. It's funny. He's never tried to get in touch with me before.
Here you are, Gov. 125 Paddington Street.
Well, here we are. Thanks for dinner, Rich.
You are. Not going to ask me in?
Oh, you don't really want to, Rich. Why not go straight home?
Perhaps you're right.
Don't let me keep you.
Just a moment while I pay the cab.
So, Gov. Good night, madam.
Good night.
Now, I wish I wasn't so roundabout in my wooing. So, you ought to be glad I'm so idiotically noble. It makes the whole thing stronger.
I hadn't noticed.
No, but you will. I apologize, though. I'm held by something. It's like a psychological compulsion the wrong way around. Pushing me back instead of forward.
Rich.
Yes, darling?
You're not going to publish those articles. I don't want you to take unnecessary risks.
Not only am I going to publish them, but I've no intention of consulting Mr. Nevin Fall before doing so.
Richard, promise me faithfully you won't be so silly.
No promises, darling.
Please, for my sake.
Oh, that's better, much better. But I shall not be careful. I shall publish and be damned. I shall say to hell with Nevin Fall.
Richard, you're not coming a step nearer unless you promise once and for all you won't publish those articles.
Well, I'm not coming a step nearer. I'm not going to promise. I'm going to stick them in that airmail envelope. There's one in the folder. Then I'm going to walk across to the post office and send them to the Joburg office now. If I tell them to print, they'll print. Will your front door be open when I get back, Lisa?
You can always try it, darling.
So it came about that I was with Lisa next morning when Susanna phoned to say that Jim had jumped off the roof.
We're friends of the deceased.
Oh, yes, he's at it all right. We've sent for the ambulance, but that's just a formality.
Can my friend go into the house, please? Mrs. Flaherty phoned us up special.
Flaherty? Was that his name? All right, I'll let the lady pass, but you stay here, sir. I'll be wanting a word with you.
Lisa, go and look after Susanna. I'll see you later.
Make way there. No, not you, madam. Keep back, please.
Dr. Bird. It's all right, Constable. This is the doctor who was looking after the deceased.
I see, sir. Come in. Come on now, move along there, please.
Jim has jumped off the roof, Dr. Bird. He's dead.
Keep going,
soon, Dr. Berg and I were in the coroner's court, being questioned by the beadle.
Now, Doctor, when they took you round to see the patient, did they tell you he was supposed to be dead and this gentleman's young lady friend had already identified the body?
No, nothing of the sort.
They didn't add that inquiries had been opened and that the inquest had stood adjourned?
No. I went with Mr. Johns to a place called Marston Batten, where we saw, in this order, a man named Bones and second James Clarty.
What opinion did you form?
The opinion that he was mentally ill.
Was he suffering from delusions?
He believed that business competitors had hired this man Bones to kill him.
You didn't report Bones?
Why should I? There were no signs of illegality.
And you did not consider the possibilities of suicide in relation to the deceased?
This is a risk I have to take every day of my life 50 times. Unless you want me to put everybody in straitjackets, including your staff.
All right, Dr. Burke. We'll get in touch with you later, if you'll kindly leave your telephone number.
Yes.
No. Sit down, Mr. Johns. We haven't started with you yet. Good day, Dr. Burke.
Good day.
You know, Mr. Johns, you really ought to have come and told us when your friend turned up alive. Now, I'm afraid that this means the CID. I'll have to hand the case over. I've no option.
Mr. Johns, they call me Ponga. Know what that means? Regular army. Had to fight for my living. Now I leg it instead. Now, if I've legged it on your case, I calculate 100 miles. This man's Bones now. Could I get a word out of him? No. All that way down to Marston Battle. Well, anyhow, I've read your deposition. Do you want police protection?
Whatever for?
Well, you know what your friend said. He was threatened.
That was a delusion. We had a psychiatrist to him.
Well, it didn't stop him being killed. Well,
he killed himself.
You don't want one of our chaps to tell you?
One chap, 24-hour shifts.
All right, two chaps, one day, one night.
That sort of you said it'd be if I was in real danger. They wouldn't see me more than 3 or 4 times a day.
Mr. Flaherty, you'd be surprised.
Flaherty is not my name.
Oh, sorry, of course, that's the stiff. Well, as I say, Mr. Johns, you'd be surprised. Once it's known one of my men's on your tail, you'll be as safe as houses. Trouble with you young chaps is you get your ideas from thrillers. Real life's cruder.
Have you finished, Mr. What shall I call you, Mr. Ponga?
There's still the morgue, Mr. Flaherty.
Oh, Mr. Johns, I've been trying to get you all day. There were 2 messages from Mr. Nevin Fall.
Any other calls?
From Mr. Van Berg. He will contact you again tomorrow.
Well, if that's all, I'm going home. I want a bath. For your information, I've just come from the morgue.
Mr. John.
Oh, thank God I'm not a medical student. They swim in this smell half the time. What did Mr. Fall want?
It's about those articles again. I think diamond-bearing gravel series. Will you be at home if his office rings?
No. After my bath, I have a train to catch. Next, I was sent for by Ernest Madam, whom I found arranging his delphiniums in the Leicester Square office.
Wonderfully tall. Wonderfully tall. Not quite right yet, though. Do you think they'd look better if I had a blue delph vase?
I seem to have seen that in a picture somewhere.
Of course, Whistler. Or was it Rossetti? You know, you deserve the sack you do, Mr. Johns.
Why?
Well, this story about coming legislation in Cape Town attributed to Africa News Service. Where is it? The South African government is so convinced of the urgency of a search for uranium deposits that it proposes to repeal the laws limiting the operations of hand prospectors for diamonds in the Orange River and other gravels.
So what? I've simply found another scoop. It's been cabled back to the USA, too.
Well, as it happens, we're not going to sack you. Story such tripe anyway. Might do for a boys' weekly, not for a grown-up newspaper.
Well, the Yanks seem to like it.
Well, that's what I meant. Pap for the infantile.
I tried to put a case for you, but it didn't go down awfully well. Yes, the thing about delphiniums is the extraordinary variety of blues you can get. Look at that one against that. Worcester china color, cold and beautiful. And this, lapis lazuli. Yes, we haven't sacked you yet. If there were any uranium in our territory, which I fear there isn't, we wouldn't let any damn prospectors look for it, of course. But I said maybe you'd done a good bit of propaganda for us by making it appear we were in favor of private enterprise. I did my best for you, but it wasn't good enough, old son.
So I'm to go down to the bank and see George Newbold again?
Oh, no, it's too late for that. You see, things have gone a bit farther than we meant them to. So they thought you might come right under Mr. Nevin's supervision from now on.
I'd like to see Nevin, Paul. I've never met him, as you know.
We're quite aware of that, old son. And we thought it would be a good thing now for you to learn more about us. You're going to meet Mr. Nevin, but not today. It may take a little time fixing. But I'll ring you, old son, don't you worry.
Outside in the square, I made a phone call myself. One I'd been meaning to make for some time. And this time I found Mr. French, the psychoanalyst, much more forthcoming.
I remember, Mr. Jones, you came to consult me some months ago. And now you want to consult me again?
Yes, in the good old days, people used to get advice from their friends free. Now we haven't got any friends, we have to pay for it. Another addition to the cost of living.
I could give you half an hour at 4 p.m. this afternoon, Mr. Jones.
I'll be there, Mr. French. I want to talk to you about illusions.
Yes, I see. Carry on, Mr. Jones.
Yes, but you don't see. If the delusion got into Jim Flaherty, where does Bill Bones come into the picture? Did he have delusions too, or what? Or do we all have delusions all the time?
We all wear masks, and sometimes the masks get frightening.
Yes. Yes, you've got me there, Mr. French, because now I find it's my turn to be frightened. I've got the delusions myself.
Can you explain a bit?
That's your job, isn't it?
I mean, what form do the delusions take?
Well, I know that Jim committed suicide, but afterwards I began to believe that he was harried into it. When I'm feeling all right, I know this is silly, but when I get depressed, the delusions come back. I feel they're waiting for me. Outside that door, possibly. I feel in the end, they'll get me in a corner and try to kill me.
But couldn't all that be real?
It wouldn't make sense.
You don't honestly think you've been provoking the big men in the diamond world?
I think I may have. I wanted to.
You wanted to? Not your friend Flaherty or Mr. Van Berg?
Well, it was their idea originally, but when George Newbold tried to talk me round into a sort of semi-spy position, I thought I'd like to blow them up with as big a bomb as I could find.
Last time you were here, you were bothered because you couldn't quite make up your mind whether to let yourself go with a young woman, wasn't that it?
Very broadly, yes.
And that's all settled now?
Anything but, unfortunately.
Well, now, a few months ago, I felt there wasn't much I could do for you, and your condition didn't seem to warrant spending time. But since then, your condition seems to have got rather worse.
Oh, that's encouraging.
I always go in for frankness about these things.
Going in for frankness isn't always the same as frankness, is it, Mr. French?
Very shrewd, Mr. Johns. Have you got any free time day after tomorrow?
Well, I'm flattered you were able to fit me in so soon.
There's the cost of living, Mr. Johns, as you said this morning. I'll make out a card for you.
You know, it'd be funny if as soon as I got in the street, I met one of Nevin Fall's crowd. That would be a turn of the screw, wouldn't it?
It would indeed. Well, here's your card. 4:30, day after tomorrow. Keep your eyes skinned, meantime.
And sure enough, when I stepped out of the door, his secretary had a telephone message for me, relayed through Miss Spiro. Would I meet Mr. Van Berg for a drink at our local that evening?
Yes, I've literally had a bad quarrel with George Newbold. A very subtle man, Rich. Good at negotiation, diplomatic.
I seem to have noticed.
You should take a lot of notice. George Newbold is a very exceptional person. There are not many such able men outside the government services.
And then there's my friend Nevin Fall.
Friend? I didn't know you'd even met. What's he like?
There's an atmosphere of quietness about your top men which goes with self-confidence. In so large an organization, it's perhaps not so surprising. But we poor foreigners, we're impressed, in spite of ourselves. Have another drink. Two more of the same, please, miss.
Right you are, sir.
It's not like you to drink so quickly, Freddy.
Well, this is a celebration. A farewell.
A farewell?
Yes.
That would be 3 minutes,
sir. Here. Thank you. Yes, what I want to tell you is that I'm going away for a bit.
Back to Holland?
No, not this time. I thought I'd have a look at Paris and then perhaps Germany. West, of course.
Have you been left a fortune?
Unfortunately, no. Rather the reverse. Well, I'll see you when I get back. If I get back.
Well, you're not going yet.
I have to pack, Rich. I'd keep well away from Newbold and Fall if I were you.
I can't. I work for them.
Then I'd find a new job.
Freddy, what are you going to say? Freddy, come back here.
Well, goodbye, Rich. Good luck. Give my love to Lisa.
So Jim's dead and now Freddy's gone.
Well, there are still the two of us left. Lisa, I don't know whether you realize how important you've become in my life lately. I'm going to talk to my psychiatrist about it tomorrow.
Don't be an ass, Rich.
You see, what I'm trying to do is to make love to you in daylight. The difference between you and other women is that you're good-looking enough to stand up to it. Few human beings are.
All right, Rich. If this is going to be daylight, let's have daylight. I don't want to marry you. I want horizons.
You mean travel? Money?
Sometimes that seems to be the only way to get what I want. But when I get to Paris or New York or wherever it is and buy the musk and drink the fizz, it doesn't seem quite what I wanted. Oh, much better not to talk in daylight, darling. Hello? Lisa Stevens here? Mr. Johns, yes, one moment, please.
Where the devil did you get this number?
Oh, from Miss Spiro. It's about this date with Mr. Nevin Fall. So happens he can manage this afternoon. Can you do that?
Well, what's the precise idea? I never did quite follow.
Well, he proposes to take you for a ride in his car. You'll probably go Epping Forest way like you did with Mr. George Newbold.
But why does he want to waste an afternoon riding around with me?
You won't go to see Nevin Fall. Promise me you won't go.
Why ever not?
Well, I'm too worried about you. Oh, you must promise.
What is there to worry about? After all, I should have offended them mortally. I bought that article, which I knew very well, touched them on the sorest spot, and smuggled it into one of their own papers. Quite outrageous. And instead of sacking me, they only propose a ride with the big boss. Oh, I call it great-hearted.
Oh, Richard, don't joke, please. I'm frightened. Can't you see? I'm frightened.
I've been putting this story down day by day. I've been putting it on paper as a way of getting rid of it, as if it might then exist apart from me. But the trouble is that this only makes it more like a jellyfish with tentacles. I decided to go down to Fleet Street before seeing Nevin Fall, to pick up the typescript in its envelope. So here I am at Leicester Square post office, writing these last few lines. When I've finished, I shall address the envelope to myself and post it. And this story, for what it's worth, will come home to me tomorrow. As a sort of safeguard, shall we say? Safeguard against what? Violence? And yet, suppose I'm not imagining all this. Coming along, I took a look at Nevin Fall's office from the other side of the road, where I said to myself, now if by chance I saw Bill Burns lurking about, I should really think my delusions are real. And sure enough, there was Bill Burns at the driving wheel of a big limousine outside the office. Obviously waiting for someone. No doubt, Mr. Fall and me. All the same, there's no need to be anxious about handling Bill Burns. I think he likes me in his way. Certainly, he doesn't want to harm me or anybody else. All I'd have to say to him is, oh, look here, old chap, come off it. Nothing like knowing your man. Nevin Fall, of course, I don't know. But I dare say I'll manage. Right. Now I must post this stuff off. It's nearly 5:30. It's funny to see for the first time Nevin Fall's chair with somebody sitting in it.
This is the producer of the program speaking. The typescript from which this play is adapted was duly delivered at Richard John's address and, after some delay, examined by the police, who yielded at last to the insistence of Mrs. Lisa Stevens and forced an entry into the flat. The only evidence they found throwing light on his disappearance was, in fact, the typescript itself, and little importance could be attached to what was obviously an essay in suspense fiction. Mr. Johns has not since been heard of. Good night, everybody. Thank you for listening.
That was Man with a Background of Flames by Richard Johns, adapted by J. McLaren Ross. The part of Richard Johns was played by Frank Partington, Lisa by Anne Jamieson, Jim Flaherty by Stanley Labor, Susanna by Rosamund Waring, and Freddie Van Berg by Tony Vandenberg. Ernest Maidum was played by Malcolm Hayes, George Newbold by John Graham, Miss Spyro, Gudrun Ewer, Mr. French, J. McLaren Ross, Dr. Berg, Griselda Harvey, Medical Superintendent, Arthur Gomez, Dirk Rockingham, Jonathan Scott, Caretaker, Joe Stern, Coroner's Beadle, Philip Morant, Irishman, Brian O'Higgins, Bones, John Durth, his sister, Betty Linton, and Pongo, John Brining. Other parts were played by Charles Ray and members of the BBC Drama Repertory Company. The play, which was recorded, was produced by R.D. Smith.
That was a repeat of last Saturday's broadcast.